Welcome to a conversation between Master Chow and Alan. Alan, you'd like to say hello for the recording.
Hello, everybody.
So today's conversation, I believe, is on dreaming. So the next voice you should hear will be Master Chow.
Good afternoon, Master Chow.
So how are you?
Fine, thank you. How are you?
I'm not too bad. So what are we talking about today?
Right, today's subject is dreaming.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so perhaps we'll start out by asking you, what is a dream? Because, as you know, we have various theories out here about what we think a dream is. Some people think it's a nocturnal journey into the subconscious. Some people think it's an astral projection. Some people think it's just random unconscious brain activity. I mean, are any of these theories true?
Well, yes, there's a bit of truth in most of that, to be honest. So at first, we need to separate out the idea of having a dream in the idea of having a goal or an ambition. That's not what we're using the word for. We're using it in the truer sense of what happens when you're asleep.
Yes.
So we're sticking all in the realm of what goes on during sleep time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So with regards to what is dreaming, maybe rather than a dream, your conscious and subconscious mind need to process what's gone on during your day. All of the thoughts and the neurons and the firing and the bits and pieces whirling around in your brain needs to be catalogued and organised and processed. So think along the lines of like a computer needs to archive, needs to back up its information.
Mm.
So your subconscious is very much a backup system as well as a processing system. So it backs up from the conscious but also analyses what's been backed up. So your conscious mind dumps the stuff down into the subconscious to keep it and to process it. So the subconscious mind gets very, very busy. So when you are sleeping, and by sleeping we do mean when you have entered into actual sleep rather than just daydreaming. We don't mean daydreaming. That's different. That's using your imagination to picture your life, to vision it, to consider what you would like to do in a waking sense. So when you are in sleep mode, your subconscious mind gets its chance to do its processing. And it processes things that you need to do, so things that need to come back into the conscious mind. So things that have been dumped down that need to come back in to the conscious. It processes things that have happened in the past that are unresolved or still need some thinking about, some learning about, or just actually stacking in the archive better. So the brain needs this function in order to let your conscious and your subconscious do its job between the two parts. So in the dream state, your consciousness and your subconscious are running these routines, these processes. So first the dump down, then the processing, the archiving, the what do I need to look at from the subconscious. Now the subconscious is pretty autonomous in this. It kind of works it out for itself. It goes, okay, well this stack of information looks good, but this stack isn't very good, so we need to do a bit of processing here. And that will trigger dreams. So that will trigger replaying. Sometimes it's replaying, sometimes it's flashbacks, sometimes it's metaphor, sometimes it's symbolic, sometimes it's really arbitrary because it's just pieces of data trying to be shuffled around the great big archive that is your subconscious. So dreaming is this sort of landscape, if you like, where the subconscious can do all of that for purely its own archiving, sometimes for your learning and your growth, and sometimes in order to push things back into the conscious mind. So with the pushing back into the conscious mind, this is where what will happen is a thought or an issue or a problem will be sitting in the conscious mind and getting nowhere. And it'll get dumped into the subconscious to kind of, if you like, go through the processing in there so it can come back up into the conscious mind with some solutions. So there's this two-way movement between the conscious and the subconscious, which is all necessary for all of that information or that experience that you're having. From the tiniest little thing in your life to the very big lessons and learnings, it all has to get processed through the conscious and the subconscious. So that is always partly what dreaming is about. Now, the dreaming can then be influenced by outside forces. So by that, I mean, one, your spirit guides can come into that landscape, that dream landscape, and speak to your subconscious, knowing it'll get pushed back up to the conscious. So they can use it as a way to bring in guidance and inspiration when there is a problem you're trying to solve. So sometimes your guides can influence that space because it's not really within you. So though it's being processed through the conscious and the subconscious, it doesn't have an actual location, if you like. It's very much more a metaphysical thing than a physical thing. So as such, your guides can influence it with their own consciousness to help with problem solving.
Right.
But that isn't astral. It's still going on in the plane of your what's created by your conscious and your subconscious. So they come into that space. They don't take you out to a space. So astral requires the astral body to move to the astral plane. So there's no astral bit with dreaming. Okay?
Right, okay.
So you can go up to the astral plane and have a conscious experience. You can inadvertently go up to the astral plane when you are in sleep mode. And this is where people get confused. So when you are in sleep mode, the body is in a particular state, the astral traveling can occur. And then the astral part of you is in the astral plane, having the experience with your guides, while the dream state is still going on between the conscious and subconscious. You're just not aware of it because your awareness is in the astral part. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
But it's a separate thing. It just can occupy the same moments of time, but they are two separate things.
So in that situation, then, your conscious awareness would be linked to the astral rather than the dream, would it?
Yes. So the subconscious will still be doing what it's doing. There'll still be dream playing that you're just not aware of because you're consciously aware of what's going on in the astral. But because it's all occurring during sleep mode, you think it's all occurring in the dream place. It's not. So if the astral is involved, then that is separate to the dream place.
I mean, how often would the astral be involved? Is this a fairly frequent thing?
No, it's not a fairly frequent thing. And some people will never experience it because they're very physically engaged, very physically locked, and don't have that need. It's not part of this life. Some people are very mobile and will be up and down like yo-yos. So it's down to the individual and what's going on with them and what help their guides feel they need. So the astral part is very different. The dream part, that processing, that happens every night, every time you enter into sleep mode. Whether you are aware of it or not, because not everybody is aware they are dreaming.
That's right, yeah. I was going to ask you about that, because as regards to the frequency of remembering dreams, it seems to run across a very wide spectrum.
Oh, yes,
from people
absolutely.
Who recall dreams every night to individuals who rarely dream, or at least they rarely recall these dreams.
Yes. And that, I think, is where the idea of dream becomes a very misleading.
Mm.
Because anything that's happening in that processing space is a dream. Okay? The dream itself doesn't have to have structure, vision, information. It's merely processing of data. So sometimes there aren't any fragments there that have any value. There's nothing being pushed back up into the conscious mind because there's no problem solving going on that's relevant to the now moment. So sometimes that archiving and data processing and shuffling the bookshelves, if you like, leaves no remnants to be remembered. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. So the thing is, you have an idea that a dream has component parts that are rememberable. And a dream doesn't. A dream merely describes the state of what is going on with your conscious and subconscious when you are in sleep mode.
Right.
And that's why it's very, very different, because it's a processing thing. If there are then parts of it that come back up into the conscious and therefore you have a memory of, well, fine, all well and good. But that doesn't make that a dream. The whole thing is a dream. The remembering is different.
Yeah, because that was another question I had for you about why the recollection of dreams is often so confusing, because for many people it seems like their dreams make little sense. They're just a collection of seemingly random and unrelated events. It's almost as though, this is one theory anyway, that during the course of a night you've had several different dreams, but you only recall fragments of them, and these fragments are then truncated together in the memory.
Yeah, because what's happening is data is bumping back up into the conscious. So while it's being shuffled around in the subconscious, some is deliberately pushed back up into the conscious. Now, the stuff that is deliberately pushed back up into the conscious, you need to remember. It needs to be there to be processed. But it doesn't necessarily mean that's going to make any sense. It just needs to be processed. But sometimes just junk. You know, there's a bit of junk that escapes. So sometimes you will get fragments that come back up into the conscious mind, into the awakened memory, that are absolutely random and completely meaningless.
Yeah, because some people do speculate on why it is they really have ever remembered a dream completely from start to finish, but it sounds as though there is no coherency to the thing anyway.
No, not necessarily. So within the subconscious is running through an event. It'll run through the event in a relatively orderly way. But orderly in accordance to the subconscious and orderly as in accordance to the conscious are very, very different. So the subconscious is ordering things instead of playing them. So if you watch a film, for instance, you are watching a motion happening from A, B, C, D, E. Yes?
Yeah.
But what the subconscious is doing is it is archiving the film. So it archives all the bits relevant to A, and then it archives all the bits relevant to B, and then it'll archive all the bits relevant to C. Because it's the bit that's important, not the pattern, not the running order. So you get bits that seemingly run and bits that seemingly don't run. But actually, the pieces that you are aware of will have a commonality. But it's not a time linear commonality. It's a specific to the fragment commonality, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
That's why to you, in a conscious form, it appears jumbled. Because you're trying to look at it from a logical movie type, almost cinema style, running on a linear timeline. Not what your subconscious is doing. It's organizing data fragments.
Right, okay. I mean, there are some people, aren't there, that don't record, never record dreams at all. What are the consequences of not recording a dream over a protracted time period, or does it not really matter?
It doesn't really matter. If there's something you need to have pushed into the conscious, it's pushed into the conscious. So even if you wake up not remembering what you dreamed, if there's any fragment or information that's been pushed back up to the conscious, it's there. It'll filter through into your awakened consciousness at the relevant point. So you might not wake up remembering the dream, but you might later on have the inspiration of how to solve your problem, and you just don't put the two pieces together.
Right.
So it isn't a given that you will remember your dreams. The other thing is also to consider there is a chemical element to all of this, and that's down to sleep quality. The poorer your sleep, the more that affects this functional processing. So if you don't go into good quality sleep mode, the functioning between the conscious and the subconscious doesn't run as well. So therefore, the data is more fragmented. The archiving and the processing doesn't happen as it needs to. So that affects whether you will remember things, or affects whether you get more bleed through, more junk coming back into the conscious mind, because the processing hasn't run properly, because the sleep isn't good. So the whole thing of dreaming requires good quality sleep. And you will know where humanity is. You guys really don't sleep very well.
That's right, and we don't get enough sleep.
Well, enough sleep is an arguable one, you know. What is enough? And often you're trying to get too many hours of poor sleep instead of a few hours of good sleep. So it's the quality of the sleep that matters, not the amount of it. If you have 20 hours of really poor sleep, it's going to do you far less good than 4 hours of very good sleep.
Right.
Because it's what happens when you're in good sleep mode. When you allow the body and the brain and all of your parts, all of your organs and everything, to go into sleep mode. So sleep mode is a kind of renewal processing mode. It's not quite hibernation, like animals might go into, but it gets reasonably close to a type of animated status where you're in a suspension. And in that suspension, a lot of your renewal occurs. So the brain and the consciousness and this, they do their thing, but all of your cellular renewal, there's a lot of that occurs. A lot of chemical changes, a lot of hormonal changes are triggered by you going into this suspended space. But if you don't have good sleep, you don't go into the suspended space. So you don't get the renewal. So therefore you don't get the chemical balances, the hormonal balances within the body, which then knock back on to the dream state. So with regards to dreaming, instead of focusing on I don't remember my dreams, look instead at what is the quality of your sleep. Because if the quality of your sleep is poor, you're trying to solve the wrong problem. You're trying to fixate on remembering a dream instead of dealing with the body's need for renewal and replenishing. And sleep is vital to that process. It's vital to the longevity of your body.
So is there a typical amount of sleep that the average sort of adult would need?
Between 4 and 8.
All right.
But it does depend a lot on the time zones you live in. So altitude, these things affect what the body needs because different altitudes impact the body's rhythms differently. So
yeah.
How high you are above sea level will change that. The amount of oxygen-rich air you have will affect that. So there are factors that change that scale. Then it's down to, are you physically allowing yourself to get exhausted enough? So if you consider early man who was very physically active, he fell into sleep from exhaustion. You don't do that now. A lot of you don't physically exert yourselves. You mentally exert yourselves. And that's a very different thing. And that doesn't create the type of sleepiness that physical activity does. So you've changed your whole dynamic with sleep. The whole wanting to live in a 24/7 society. Well, where is there any out 8 hours in that for sleep? So you have fundamentally changed your relationship to sleep, but you're fixated on what you're doing in your dreams. Looking at the wrong problem. Look at the quality of your sleep. Sleep quality is imperative.
Yeah. What about the relationship of sleep between children and adults? Do we need more or less as we get older?
You go through an arc. So children tend to sleep a lot and then go into teenage years where they sleep less. Then you're going to adult years where you'll sleep more. And then you're going to older adult years where you'll sleep less again like a child. So the longer you live, the more variety you will see. So it kind of goes in not quite 20-year chunks, but you could use it as a rough guide. So as you go through puberty, the length changes. As you come into maturity, it changes. As you come into middle age, it changes. And as you come into old age, it changes again. So there isn't a set amount of time. It's down to lots of factors going on within you. So your geography, your topography, and your age.
Okay, right. Now, there is obviously a therapeutic aspect to dreaming. I mean, does the nature of our dreams provide important clues to psychological issues? And to what extent can dreaming be used to help with dealing with mental health issues?
Under supervision, dreaming can be used to help with problem solving and processing. But it needs to be done with someone who understands what they're doing, not just wandering around in your subconscious for good fun. So if they understand how the subconscious is working, if they're guiding it, then you'll be using more of hypnotic practices rather than sleep-orientated practices. So if you're using hypnosis to access the subconscious, and that can be healing in therapeutic with a practitioner who understands what they're doing, if you are looking at dealing with psychological issues rather than, you know, wanting to know who you were in your last life. You know, it's how you use it. But they are using more of the altered state of consciousness to access the subconscious processing rather than sleep. So what a psychologist might do is ask you to write down your dreams, because if there is bleed through into the conscious mind, then that might be your subconscious mind trying to assist you in problem solving. Now, some of that problem-solving thing, the other part of that dream landscape, so we said the guides can come into the dream landscape sometimes to give you problem-solving assistance. So can your soul. So the soul doesn't do it as often, because it's quite a long way from where the soul is up to the dreamscape to bring in information, but it can. It does do it occasionally. So what it'll sometimes do is it might create a ripple through your system to almost trigger the subconscious to release something up to the conscious mind. So sometimes what's coming through in the dreams might be triggered by a ripple effect from the soul, trying to bring your attention to something, like your guides would be if they are coming into the dream space. So that's where they can be useful if you are remembering a dream. And we don't mean fragments here. Fragments tend to be more bleed through. It's when there is a bit more structure to it, a bit more consistency to it, repetitive, repeating things. So not one dream, but several of the same. Once you're seeing a pattern like that, something is being influenced. So is that the subconscious pushing up information to the conscious? Is that your guides trying to, or your soul trying to? So the repetitive nature is more interesting than the singular.
Right, right. Because that reveals a pattern.
There's a pattern. If there's a pattern, something is trying to bring something to your awareness. And chances are, if it's your guides or your soul, it's trying to do it in lots of ways. This is only one of the many ways they'll be trying to bring your attention to this thing.
Right, right. I mean, can you consciously choose to meet your guides or your soul in your dreams, or is it something where they would only enter it if they deem it necessary?
Sometimes people do ask their guides to come and talk to them in their dreams, and the guides will oblige once or twice because it's about trust and relationship building. But to be honest, if you're not going to remember it, is it really going to do anything?
Well, yes, exactly.
So when you are asking that, you are also implying that you're going to remember, which your guides can't necessarily guarantee. So it can be more of a letdown than a benefit. So a few people will find it successful occasionally, but a lot of people will find it not, because they don't remember. So then they feel almost let down more than if they hadn't tried in the first place. So you know, it's not the most constructive thing to try.
Right, okay. Now, what about people experiencing night terrors? I mean, I think it's fair to say that, most people experience a few nightmares during the course of a lifetime.
There is a difference between a nightmare and a night terror. So you need to be clear with your language there. A nightmare is a frightening dream. So a nightmare might be a fear or an anxiety that's being processed, or a trauma that's being processed might trigger a nightmare. And often that's a fear-based response. A night terror goes up a level from that. And night terrors are almost 90% of the time identical. So they follow exactly the same pattern. There is a pattern to a night terror. Nightmares can vary. So night terrors tend to be quite specifically the same thing. Now, night terrors can come from two different sources. One can be a deep psychological wound, where it is a deep trauma that's trying to get through. The other can be chemically induced. So certain chemical hormonal imbalances triggers night terrors. And if you like, it's almost like your body's warning system. So if you consider that when you're ill, your body does things to alert you. So pain is part of your body's alert system. Ow, that hurts. Oh, there's a problem. Okay? Sometimes when the thing doesn't have a pain response to it, a night terror is a way it can be triggered, can be a response. So when there is an imbalance in the body, sometimes what it does is it can trigger that psychological pain response, if you like. That can be a night terror. So night terrors can have to be looked at in context of where the person is as a whole. Night terrors also tend to be very primal. So they will have a very primal element to it, which is why so many people experience exactly the same type of imagery, because it's a primal trigger. It's triggering something very deep within the DNA, genetic coding of your human body. So it's almost a throwback to some of the early warning systems, your survival system, if you like, within that more animal part of your body, rather than your more sophisticated intelligence as you see yourselves now as humans. Yes? That's why night terrors tend to be very, very similar. Nightmares have similarities, but there's lots of variations on a theme. Night terrors tend to be much more confined. Night terrors will also often trigger far greater physiological reactions than a nightmare. So with a nightmare, you might wake up panicked, sweating. Night terror can trigger cardiac events. There's a bigger level of physiological reaction, because it's hitting you at a very much more primal level.
I mean, they do seem as well, don't they, to be side effects of the regular use of certain kinds of medications, such as antidepressants.
Yes, and that's the thing, where it becomes down to chemicals. Sometimes those chemical hormonal things tap into that deep primal bit and release it when there is not a psychological reason for it being released. As I said, there's two reasons for night terrors. That deep psychological wound, or a chemical induced one, whether that's hormonal or something you ingest.
Right.
So hormonal, okay. For instance, when the thyroid is very out of control, it can trigger night terrors, because it's overly affecting the brain chemistry. So it isn't only from artificial substances. It can also be from the hormones and chemicals within your own body going into extreme.
Now, what about the associated brainwave states that go with dreaming? I mean, the general view down here seems to be that dreaming is associated with REM sleep, which seems to mainly occur in the theta brainwave states, and REM sleep is claimed to be part of a recurring 90-minute cycle that also includes non-REM sleep periods. I mean, is that generally correct?
Usually you're looking at a sleep cycle of about 3 to 4 hours. And through that, you will go into pre-REM, REM, and then back out again. So the 90 minutes of actual REM as an average isn't a bad average. But it can be more or less. Again, you are all very different. You know, you have your little quirks. So to say it's 90 minutes always wouldn't be a fair. You're too diverse as a population now. But if we're talking good sleep, quality sleep, 90 minutes is a reasonably good average in a 3 or 4 hour sleep cycle.
Right. I mean, some experts believe that most adults need about 2 hours of REM sleep each night to be healthy.
And that's not a bad guesstimate. Really, what you're talking is more, you want at least one good cycle, but ideally two cycles of REM. It does, again, depend on your topography and where you are. So, depending on your altitude, you might get away with one very good. Some will need two for health.
What would happen actually if you consistently fell short of what you needed in terms of REM sleep?
If you don't get the good quality sleep where you're not going into REM at all, then the body isn't renewing.
Oh, right.
So on a cellular level, your renewal slows down. And that's everything from liver to skin, right the way through to hormone replenishing, detoxing, releasing waste products within the body, as well as fatigue and exhaustion, which will lead to more anxiety and depression. Your whole brain, if you like, starts to become dysfunctional. So your very thought process requires you to have sleep, to have clarity. Mm. So if you think about the dump down of information from conscious to subconscious, if you go back to the idea of your computer, what happens with your computer if you're not downloading stuff? It gets full. And it gets slow as it gets fuller. And it starts to process slower, doesn't it, when it's got too much data in it?
Yes,
so
indeed,
you
yeah.
back it up onto something else. Well, that's the same with your brain. So if you're not going into the good sleep, the brain isn't releasing data and memories and information down. So it gets overwhelmed. And it starts to therefore process slower. So you'll get less clarity. You'll get less cognitive ability. You'll get less cell renewal. You'll be more vulnerable to infection because the immune system will slow down. So it will hit every single part of your physicality. Now, obviously, one night of no sleep won't do that. But consistently not getting it, it starts to erode at all of those things. Mm. And the longer it occurs for, the more time it takes to build you back up. So if you went for 50 nights of poor sleep, one good night will not fix it.
Mm.
You know, it will take a build up to get you back to an even keel again.
Right. I mean, what practices do you think would actually, you know, encourage better quality REM sleep?
Well, look at what you're doing with regards to how you are actually allowing yourself to get exhausted. And this is the problem slightly with shifting from a physical way of living to a mental way of living.
Mm.
So where you were more physically active, you got tired, the body got tired, and that told you it was time to sleep. Now, because you're more mentally active, so by that I mean you're using your brain more, you don't get the physical cues that it's time to sleep. You've slightly shifted your circadian rhythm, your body's actual precursor signaling, if you like. So that doesn't help. You're also using lots of screens. Now, the light also affects your brain chemistry. The light coming off of your digital equipment, coming off of your TV screens. You're becoming overstimulated before you want to be restful. So your whole pattern of how you are living is cramming too much in before bed. Because you feel you're so time poor, you don't use your time wisely.
Mm.
You try to cram everything in those few hours before bed, and actually all you do is make bed really bad. So you have to consider everything you are doing, from what you are eating, to what you are drinking, to what you are engrossing your body in, so the stimuli, and actually change the whole rhythm of how you're doing things to be more conducive to calming the system down before getting into bed. So that when you get into bed, you go to sleep very quickly. You want to be falling to sleep within the first 15, 20 minutes. After 20 minutes, if you haven't fallen asleep, you're going to start struggling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, one doctor did recommend turning off all electronic devices at least half an hour before you go to bed, and perhaps have something quiet like just reading a book.
Yes, but most of you do that on an electrical device.
No, that's right, a real book.
So a real book, yes. So the thing is, I would almost say half an hour. If we were talking 10 years ago, half an hour before bed would be fine because there was less stimulus everywhere. Now you have stimulus coming at you from literally every source, to televisions in your bedroom. You go to bed with your phones, for pity's sake.
Yeah.
So I don't think half an hour now really is enough. I would think 45 minutes to an hour. If you're going to start re-educating your body back into good sleep, I would think start with an hour.
Right.
And then slowly work down to just half an hour as you've got your body and your system back into a more natural rhythm. Look at how you are sleeping, and we mean then bed, light, the whole temperature in the room. I mean, there's a whole science to sleep that gets overlooked. It gets shunted down the pile of importance. You know, it's more important to do exercise. No, more important to sleep. You know, you can exercise like, I don't know, you know, bodybuilders or athletes. But if you're not getting decent sleep, it's a slippery slope to nowhere.
Mm.
Sleep is not being given the priority it needs.
Right, right.
So,
okay.
Sleep health, very, very important to good health and good well-being.
Right, okay. Now, is there a symbolic language in dreaming? I mean, we have many books down here that seem to decode the meaning of events in a dream.
Yes.
But that does imply, of course, that there's a common symbolism that relates to these events. I mean, a good example of this would be a person being chased by a wild animal, his duty taken to be a sign of danger. Now, do such generalities apply in dreams, or is it the case that the meaning will vary tremendously from one person to another?
No, there are commonalities, definitely. You will get variations based on belief systems. So some belief systems will color the meanings slightly, you know. But for the most part, there's a really reasonably good chunk of the symbology that will resonate with the majority.
Right.
So the reason it's symbolic is because it is data being processed in its raw sense. So there isn't order and that. It is more symbolic. It is that part of you that does still connect with the symbolic. So, yes, symbology is important. It's good sometimes to use those things to help you process your own thoughts.
Mm.
The thing with a lot of that symbology is if it doesn't resonate with you, look for another option. But if you keep looking for another option, that's because you're resisting rather than because it doesn't resonate. So there is a very fine line between that.
Right.
So you do need to be honest with yourself. Are you just resisting accepting that is what it's trying to tell you? Or actually, it genuinely doesn't resonate with you? So you have to be honest with yourself there.
Right, okay. Right. Now, what do you think about lucid dreaming? I mean, this has become a popular subject over the last 10 years. And obviously, the idea of being able to wake up in a dream and take control of it is very appealing to many people because it holds out the possibility of being able to turn their dreams, their dream life, that is, into a fantasy world which they can consciously control. For a smaller number of people, though, it may also be appealing because it seems to have therapeutic possibilities because it can help them deal with phobias or encounter and reintegrate aspects of themselves.
They're just using it as a variation on using a good hypnotic state. So if you're using it in that type of therapeutic practice, then hypnosis has been there for a long time for that reason, can be very useful for those types of things. You have to be careful, at least within hypnosis, because there is a third party there who should be acting responsibly, who should be caring for you and not influencing. That's a big one. That has some safeguards to it. If you're doing it within your lucid dreaming, the safeguards aren't necessarily there. And then you would have to consider and take responsibility for the choice. And do you really understand what you are choosing?
Yeah.
With something simple, okay. But with more complex things, there is a great opportunity there to delude yourself. And actually to make things worse rather than better. It isn't something to go into lightly. It will be something to go into because other things have not worked, for instance.
So then people who think they can, for example, reintegrate aspects of themselves, such as disassociated complexes and even subpersonalities, they might be treading on the...
I think they would be BS. They could run the risk of doing themselves more harm than good if they were just blithely going in.
Right, right. But what about lucid dreaming from a recreational point of view, purely for enjoyment?
But then isn't that just embarking on a fantasy world? Isn't that just a variation of daydreaming?
Well, it sounds like it's more exciting than just daydreaming.
But then doesn't that talk about the fact that something is missing in your life that you're trying to fill artificially?
Yes, but don't you think so many people's lives are so mundane that they do need that kind of release valve?
But if it's an artificial release valve, in a world that's so full of artificial release valves, doesn't that talk about a deeper, bigger problem?
Oh, yes, yeah.
So you're trying to fix something that shouldn't be broken.
Right. So how lucid dreaming affects the brain? I've been looking at a report actually produced by an independent organisation called the Sleep Foundation. Mm-hmm. They were saying actually that lucid dreams incorporate unusual patterns of brain activity with both elements of both sleep and wakefulness. Mm-hmm. And it said it may even be conceived of as a sort of hybrid form of consciousness. Mm-hmm. But the researchers have cautioned that this may interfere with the processes that normally occur during REM sleep.
Yes, I would concur that there is definitely a risk for. If one doesn't know what one's doing. And again, a lot of these things come from a point of what are you using as your baseline? And a lot you'll find with a lot of therapeutic spiritual type practices, the baseline for those is that you are in a balanced, healthy place. That's the baseline. So therefore, if that's your baseline, then you get a lot of positive effects from these things. But if your baseline in reality is actually traumatized, suffering, psychologically or emotionally imbalanced or wounded, then your baseline is in a very different place. And so therefore your outcome is going to be very different. So the baseline for these things has to be considered against the individual trying the technique. Do they meet the baseline requirement? And actually, a lot of these practices do not even consider the baseline. A lot of the ancient practices, which these are all stemming from, were based on the baseline of a balanced person, a person who was standing in their well-being, who was standing in the knowingness of self. Well, that doesn't describe a lot of humanity where you are now, does it?
Well, that's right.
So the baseline is wrong. And that's where they have to consider how they are using these techniques.
Well, some researchers have already found, actually, that lucid dreaming is associated with a lower quality of sleep. And also, some believe as well, apart from disrupting the normal sleep cycle, possibly leading on to insomnia, for some people, it can also be linked to psychosis, depression.
Well, it could definitely be very addictive.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, it's that artificial fantasy world. It's that, you know, there is a thing now, you have a big draw to virtual reality. But again, you're not considering the consequences of virtual reality. There are benefits for virtual reality, ways it can be used which can be very constructive. But again, it's the baseline of the why are you using it. And if you keep constructing these artificial things, is that not just a type of escape?
Well, yes, it is.
You have to know why you were doing it and own why you were doing it. If the reason is right, then the potential for benefit is there. But if the reason isn't right, because you've not considered it, you don't really know, you're not standing in your own power, you're not being honest with yourself, then the outcome could go either way. Just needs to be a little bit more thought about why the person is coming to these techniques. Are they just looking for a way to bypass, circumvent their pain instead of heal their pain?
Right, okay. Well, thank you. Well, that comes to the end of my questions. Is there anything else you would like to say about dreaming?
Only that I think stop worrying about dreaming and worry more about sleeping. If you don't start sleeping better, you are going to get more physical illness, more mental illness. And I don't mean their schizophrenia, because that's completely different. That sits in chemical imbalance. That has nothing to do with sleep. Though lack of sleep would make it worse, it doesn't cause it. But actually with anxiety, with lack of focus, with not trusting yourself, with not being able to have executive function, to actually do your problem solving, that can be affected by lack of sleep, lack of good quality sleep. Your whole body rhythms, your immune system all gets affected by lack of good quality sleep. So don't worry about, can I remember my dream? Consider, did I have a good night's sleep? That would be my final word on the subject.
Okay, thank you.
Good. Okay. So, on that note, then I say goodbye.
Yes, goodbye.
God bless. Okay, so that's the end of the conversation on dreaming. I hope you found it interesting, and thank you for listening.